I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started Turtle Smith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
There you go. Okay, well, on to our main segment today. It is step three of phase two. It's an exciting one for me. It's the accounting section. It's just something I actually know about. I'm excited to talk about. This is going to be a very basic overview of accounting. I don't want to get too crazy. I mean, you know, accounting is a four-year degree, so it would be wild for me to sit here and say all the intricacies of accounting. But you should, in this step, be brushed up and up on the various aspects of accounting just so you can be able to have an intelligent conversation about it with your tax preparer and accountant so you kind of know what's going on. There'll be more information available on the website, and then we're hoping to do some really in-depth masterclasses in the future where we can really talk about how to use the various softwares and how to produce your financial statements. But there is a lot of available information on YouTube and classes that you can take if you wish to dig into this further. So we're going to talk about the basics of accounting. The first thing to talk about is cash basis versus accrual. And so as a small business, 99% of the time, I would say you're probably going to use what's called a cash basis system of accounting. That basically just means that whenever money enters your possession, you know, your bank account or in your hand, and whenever it leaves, that's when you're recording that transaction. So if you buy something, that day is when you expense it. If you receive revenue, that day is when you record it. And so that's cash basis. It just follows the money. Accrual basis is a little more complicated, but it is better in some circumstances. Accrual-based accounting is when you record the invoices as of the day that you receive them, not necessarily when you pay them out. Same thing for revenue. When you invoice a customer, that's when you're recording the revenue, not necessarily when you receive the money. So those things have two other accounts, you know, accounts payable and accounts receivable that you kind of have to track. So I don't suggest as a small business owner that you really use accrual unless you have a tax accountant or a bookkeeper or somebody like that helping you along the way.
So just from a layperson's perspective on this, if I'm and correct me if I'm not understanding this correctly. Mm-hmm. So if I were to book invoices, so I invoice someone, I book that then as basically as income. Mm-hmm. When I send an invoice out.
Yeah.
But the invoice hasn't been paid.
Right.
Similar to booking an invoice that I owe, but it hasn't been paid.
Yep.
Right. So at the end of the year, when there's outstanding invoices or outstanding, whether I'm supposed to be paid or whether I'm supposed to pay them, how does that work out for knowing where you stand? I mean,
If you're in accrual accounting, you just record all those. Those are recorded on your profit and loss. Those are recorded on your taxes. Those outstanding receivables are considered revenue in the accrual accounting. But on a cash basis accounting, which is what I'm recommending that all small business owners use, I use a cash basis for all of your businesses. Whenever we receive money, when it's deposited to the bank account or when it's, you know, accepted into your possession, that is when we record it as income, not when you invoice or when you're due money.
Okay. So basically what we're saying to you is just use cash basis.
It's the most common and typical for small businesses. Now, accrual accounting does have some advantages, but like I said, you do need a bookkeeper or somebody paying attention to it all the time. And it'll become a real headache as a small business owner if you're trying to run your business and do accrual accounting.
Now, bookkeeping in general is just a pain in the butt for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we really don't like it to do it.
Which is why companies like mine exist. So,
well, exactly. But I went through two other accountants, you know, mm-hmm. before I got to you, and neither of those accountants offered bookkeeping.
Yeah.
They offered me like phone numbers of people who would do bookkeeping. But even those people wanted us to pretty much do the bookkeeping before it got to them to do the bookkeeping.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's not a lot of services that do the full service bookkeeping as you're kind of going along. Most of them will just review your transactions, which is something that small businesses should look into. Your accountants can also do it. I offer that service here where I just review people's books as well.
Now, I think it's become a little bit easier these days because a lot of transactions are done electronically. You can review it through the bank accounts and other cards and stuff like that.
That is true.
And then I guess the one that's outstanding is whatever happens in cash, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the hardest one to deal with.
Yeah, it can be.
So. But yeah, I have been very satisfied with how you've been handling everything. And
well, I appreciate that. So in bookkeeping, in today's what's called the GAAP, Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, we use double entry bookkeeping. And so this can be a little bit of complicated to wrap your head around. So we'll have more information on the website, but try to follow along a little bit if you can. So whenever a transaction occurs, whenever you buy something, whenever you receive money for revenue, it affects at least two accounts on your chart of accounts. So when you set up your accounting, you have a whole chart of accounts, which has a list of, you know, bank accounts and assets, and then all the expenses and potential revenue. Double entry bookkeeping affects at least two of those with every transaction. So for example, when you receive money, your cash balance increases and your revenue increases. So those two different accounts both are affected by the receiving of cash. When you pay out an expense, your cash goes down and your expense amount goes up. And so two accounts there are also affected. And we use a system called credits and debits. So you credit one account, debit another account, and they equal out. And that is the basis of double entry bookkeeping. It gets a lot more complicated when you have, like, you know, things that might affect multiple accounts, but that's the basics of double entry bookkeeping. Every time you do a transaction, it affects more than one account.
Don't do what I did, though. I did quadruple entry bookkeeping, which was somehow when I tried to use QuickBooks myself, I somehow doubled everything and thought I was making a lot more money than I was, which obviously I was not, and which I believe you had to untangle a lot of.
A little bit. We untangled some, but it worked out fine. So. It's important to understand kind of the basics of double entry bookkeeping and how the credits and debits works. Again, we'll have a lot more information online, and there's some tutorials out there where you can learn a little bit better from actual teachers who can teach this a little better. But the whole point of using the double entry bookkeeping, whether you're using the cash basis or accrual, is to develop the financial statements. So the financial statements are the entire point of bookkeeping. You want to have accurate financial statements for your business. And there are four financial statements. There is the balance sheet, profit and loss, statement of cash flows, and then the statement of retained earnings. The first one, the balance sheet, it basically just gives a snapshot of your company at any point in time. So it has your assets, your liabilities, and your equity on there. And that gives you, just at any given day or any point in time, it gives you a snapshot of basically what your company's worth. So the assets should equal liabilities and equity. That's the balance sheet formula. But your assets are things like cash, fixed assets, inventory, accounts receivable, things of that nature. Your liabilities are what you owe. So accounts payable, credit card balances, your taxes that you might owe, sales tax or payroll taxes. And then the equity portion is considered the value of the company basically after liquidation. So if you took your assets and, you know, liquidated them all, paid off all of your liabilities, you'd be left over with what your equity is.
So where this information is important is like understanding that just because you have a balance in the bank doesn't mean that you should spend it.
Right. Right. And on a balance sheet, the important things for a small business owner to understand and to look at are the assets and the liabilities. So you want to see what you have available to you as assets and what you owe on them. And that's what the balance sheet is telling you. Make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
So the next statement that's very important is the profit and loss. It's also called the income statement or profit statement, things like that. It basically just shows your business profitability over a given period of time. So you can do monthly, quarterly, yearly, you can do daily or weekly, but over a given period of time, it tells you how profitable your company is. And so you have revenue minus expenses equals your profit. And that's a little bit janky. There's a few steps in between, but you take your total revenue and subtract all the expenses that you have, and then you should have your net income. So really how it goes is there's a few different categories within the profit and loss. First, you do have your revenue, and then just under that, you have your top of the line expenses, or what we call cost of goods sold. So cost of goods sold are the direct expenses related to paying your paying for the revenue. So, you know, raw materials, inventory purchases, costs of direct labor, things like that fall under cost of goods sold. And revenue minus your cost of goods sold is equal to what we call gross revenue or gross profit. And then you subtract all your ordinary business expenses. So, you know, administrative, rent, insurance, legal, utilities, things like that. And then you kind of end up with your net income. And so that's what the profit and loss is all about, just showing what your income is.
So I think a lot of business people, especially new business people, they make the mistake of conflating revenue with profit.
It's a very common one. I'll have a lot of people come in and say, I made, you know, $1 million last year, and really you had $1 million in revenue, but after all the expenses, you lost money.
Right. They like to brag about their revenue. Mm-hmm. But one maxim that I learned early on is it's not about how much you make, it's about how much you keep.
That is 100% true. Yeah, it's all about what you take home at the end of the day. Speaking of what you take home, is the next statement is the statement of cash flow. So net profits does not always equate to what you take home at the end of the day. And so the statement of cash flow makes up that difference to actually show how much cash you're increasing or losing every month. And one of the most common things that is not on the profit and loss that people get confused on that does show up on the statement of cash flow is your debt service. So you don't expense, loans are not an expense when you pay off the principal of loan. You can expense the interest, but not the principal. Just like loans, when you get a loan, is not income. So that lives on your balance sheet, long-term loans. And when you pay those off, it does not affect your profit and loss, but it will affect your statement of cash flow. So that's the next important one to have on there, statement of cash flows, and understanding the difference between net income and cash flow.
Okay.
And the last statement is the statement of retained earnings. This is not as vital for small businesses. This is mostly used for larger businesses, but it just shows the retained earnings over time. Retained earnings are cash that you have increased that you've kept in the account. And that shows up in your equity portion of the balance sheet. And that gives a little more detail into the equity or value of your company. But again, small businesses don't really bother with it too much.
So, you know, the thing with all this for me is that all of this makes my eyes glaze over.
Yep.
I know it's important, but what it where the real importance is comes in for me. And again, you know, I'm going to say this is something that I've really has come into focus since we've been doing business together. Since you've been my accountant and are able to explain these things, what it really does for me is be able to let me know where I'm really at and what I can and cannot invest in, mm-hmm. what I can and cannot do. If I want to buy a machine that costs $50,000, can I afford it? And if I can afford it, then what's the best way to buy it?
Yep.
Those types of things.
Absolutely. And it's very important to understand kind of each of these statements. And you know, a great example from our time together on Working Something is when we went and visited that building and we were thinking about buying this office building because we needed some office space. So we're thinking, why not just buy one that's already making money? And we went over and looked and they showed us the profit and loss and it was making $80,000 a year, which, you know, great. We can make $80,000 a year and have some office space. But by the time you add in the necessary capital improvements and the debt service that we'd have to pay, we may have a $80,000 net profit, but we're certainly not cash flowing $80,000.
Right.
So understanding how to read all of these statements is really the most important thing for a small business owner. You want to be able to understand what's on your balance sheet and what your profit and loss is, and then finally, what is your cash flow? So if you can just take a little time to give yourself a brief overview of these financial statements and how they're created, then you're going to be
Well, another thing that's come up recently for me where that's important is I'm thinking about selling one of my other businesses, mm-hmm. and just being able to hand over the balance sheet or the profit and loss or the statement of cash flow and know that this information is correct and it's verifiable. So if they were to audit it in the process of purchasing the business, then they wouldn't find anything that's questionable and everything checks out. So therefore, the amount that we're asking is well within the realm of what is standard and acceptable for a business, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So there are five types of accounts on these financial statements that we have to just give a brief definition for. The first one is assets. So assets are anything that you own, which is cash, receivables, fixed assets, which are things like equipment, vehicles, building, things of that nature. And then there are other kind of current assets like security deposits and things like that, maybe advances to your employees. But that's assets. It's things that you either own or are due to you. Liabilities are the opposite of that. They're things that you owe. So payables, loans, notes, accrued taxes, things of that nature, things that the company or you personally owe are considered liabilities. And then equity, again, we talked about that earlier, considered the value of the company. And then finally, the other two accounts are revenue, which is money received or earned, and expenses, which is money the business has to pay. And these five accounts make up all the different items that are on your chart of accounts. So every accounting software, QuickBooks is the most common, so I said that, but every accounting software or accounting method in general has what's called a chart of accounts, and they list everything out. So if you have three bank accounts, you have, you know, three different assets listed as bank accounts, and then you have all the different liabilities and equity and then your sales and all your different expense categories. Those fall under a chart of accounts, but all of the accounts on there fall under one of these categories. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. So that's kind of the basics of accounting. Again, we'll go over a lot more on how to...
Can we say equity is like if you had to sell everything, what would be left over? Mm-hmm. But that's your equity in the business.
Yeah, that's your equity in the business. Similar to equity in a house. Like, you know, if you were to sell the house, how much, you know, value do you have over the liability that you own?
So, right. Okay.
Yeah, very simple. The next thing we're going to talk about a little bit is, actually, it's a difference. I didn't write it on here. Sorry, John. So you're just going to have to listen to this one. Is how to deal with your different expenses. So, you have to be able to easily record all of your transactions. And we'll talk a little bit about software here in a second. But the most important thing is if you have a small business, you need some type of banking or credit cards or something to show your expenses on the easiest way. Set up a business bank account, set up a credit card account, and then all of your transactions will be there. All the money you make, deposit it to your account. All the money you spend it out of one of those accounts, and then it's easily trackable.
So when I started this business, I couldn't get any kind of a business credit card from anyone, mm-hmm. so I used personal credit cards.
Yep.
Now, as you've told me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's a single person LLC, so I'm the sole owner, then that is treated by the IRS as a sole proprietorship or basically just a simple business, right?
Correct. And we'll get to that a little bit later, but yes, that's absolutely accurate.
So in that situation, it wasn't that bad of a deal to use my personal credit cards, right?
Yeah. Other accountants may disagree with me on this one, but I'm of the opinion that you need to figure out a way to make your business work in any way possible. So if you need to put stuff on a credit card and you cannot get a business line of credit, fine, use your personal card. But make sure that you're paying attention to which transactions are on there. Go through your statement, highlight them so that you have them, put them in an Excel spreadsheet, something like that. So you're tracking all of your business expenses. Somewhere.
That's when it becomes even more important to do that because you don't want to, like, especially if you have an LLC or something like that, you don't want to, what do they call it, piercing the corporate veil or something?
That is correct. Yeah, it's always better to have a business bank account and a business credit card, and everything is just under the business, and not to have any personal expenses out of your business accounts or your credit card account. But you want to do that not to the detriment of your business, in my opinion anyway. Other accountants might call me crazy. They'll say, oh, you're going to get screwed, or you're going to have the corporate veil pierced, which that's a very specific definition of your LLC offers you limited protection from getting sued, so your personal assets aren't sued. But if you intermingle your personal expenses with your business expenses, the courts can claim that your LLC is not valid. And so they can go after your personal accounts. Mm-hmm. But it is, in my opinion, more important to get your business off the ground. So do everything you can to do the right thing. But if you have to cut some corners using a personal card, using a personal account, that is okay. Just try to limit it and get it corrected as fast as you can.
But just make sure that you're booking everything correctly.
Correct. Yeah. And so there's two sides to bookkeeping, which is what we're talking about now. There is the invoicing, and then there's the payable side. And so my kind of tips on invoicing is really make sure that you are keeping good track. Now, accounting softwares have great resources for that. If you refuse to use an accounting software for a little while, that's okay. There's invoicing software, or there's just good old-fashioned, you know, Excel spreadsheets. You can make up your own invoice. But you really want to pay attention to tracking every single job or, you know, sale or whatever. Point of sale systems work at retail shops, you know, those kind of things. I have met with several business owners who've done, you know, big jobs, and then they just forget to get paid because they're moving on to the next job, you know.
That happens, you know. And then it's really hard sometimes to untangle it, especially if someone claims they paid you.
Right. Yeah. And if you don't have real good tracking, which again, the software comes in handy, it's hard to know what you got paid on. And it's really hard to piece all that together, particularly if you have a common service. So like a lot of my clients pay me the same amount every single month. And so if I don't have an invoice and then tie the payment to the invoice, I might not know who paid me that month if I don't record it, you know? So it's really important to have some kind of good tracking for your payments, because you will get screwed. And even I'm an accountant, I'm very good at it. And even I've got shorted a few times or miscounted or not got paid on things.
Yeah. It's especially good as well, because sometimes some of those big ones, if you're not paying attention to it, you could find yourself coming up short to pay payroll and things like that because you were expecting money to come in and you just hadn't paid attention to it.
Right. So some type of software, or again, Excel's okay, but software is the best way to use. And I would recommend QuickBooks. We'll talk a little bit more about software, but the invoicing stuff for most of that, or a point of sale system, is really key to track all of your invoicing.
I just want to make a comment in general, though. Not, this isn't really about accounting as much as it is about logistics. Mm-hmm. So when people buy from me, when they order a custom case,
yeah,
I make them pay in advance. Mm-hmm. Some people will balk at that and they will say, oh, you know, why am I paying you before the case is made? And I say it simply like this. Once I do all the work, especially if it's a custom case, and very especially if it has your name on it, it becomes far easier for you to chase me for the case than it is for me to chase you for the money. Because I'm the one that has a reputation to lose. I'm the one that has a company that's in one place. So if I don't make your case on time, you can go to the public, you know, and say, hey, this guy's screwing me, right?
Yep.
But if I go to the public and I say, and then the public opinion will be the one that gets me to get off my ass and make your case, right? But if I switch it around and I go to the public and I say, hey, I've got this case I made and this guy's not paying me, then everyone's going to go, oh, that guy's a piece of shit. You know, I hope he gets karma coming to him, but nobody's going to get me paid.
Yeah. Well, and I think we both have stories about being held hostage or not getting paid by clients. I myself did a huge job. I set aside 2 weeks for one specific client and was expecting a big paycheck early on, and he stiffed me after I did all the work. So now I almost refuse to do any work unless I really know the person without at least a half upfront deposit.
Yeah, no, it's you have to do it because it's one of those things where not everybody, most people are going to be good and they're going to pay their invoices on time. But, you know, those the percentage of people that slow pay you or don't pay you, you know, not only can it hurt you financially, but it just hurts internally. You know, it's just like you did the work. Where's my pay?
Yeah.
You know, and if people work for you, they expect to get paid. You know, imagine if I did that to my employees and I said, oh, you know what? I'm just not going to pay you this week.
Yeah.
You can wait a week or two, can't you? You know, it's that would be ridiculous.
Well, it happens more often than you think, though. So.
Yeah, I know it does. I know it does. I mean, we've had, you know, we've had people play those games. And it happens a lot with bigger companies doing it to smaller companies because they know that those smaller companies can't really afford to sue for the money.
Mm-hmm.
They can't afford to take the time to sue for the money, you know, yep. And, you know.
Well, and there's not much recourse either to not getting paid as a small business. So as much as possible, I think it's a great tip to get paid up front or at least not give them their item or goods or service until they pay you.
There was a famous lawyer who made a practice out of stiffing contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So he would either stiff them outright or he would offer to pay pennies on the dollar, you know, for the agreed on, you know, less than the agreed on price.
And more often than not, they'd accept and, just because they can't find it.
Yeah. And he would basically say, if you don't like it, sue me. Because
mm-hmm.
he knew that he could tie them up in court for a long time. And eventually, you know, if he lost in court, he would pay it. But he could pay at any time and just kill the suit.
Yep.
And so that's how he used it. So he would get people to acquiesce that way.
It's a mess.
And it was terrible. And he finally got lost several of those suits that when people had enough and said, fine, I will sue you. And he ended up losing quite a lot, you know, from it. But who knows how many hundreds or thousands of people he did that to before he finally got a comeuppance.
Yeah. That's a good word. I was actually just thinking about that when you said it. So on the flip side of your invoicing and your revenue is the expenses or accounts payable. This is a little individual for everybody. They'll kind of have to decide what works best for them. But I will tell you that I have seen tons of companies come through my office and just be nickeled and dimed to death by late fees and penalties and interest for not paying things on time. So it is vitally important to not only have like a schedule of what payments are going out and what are due, but also really important to kind of track those invoices as best you can. Have a file folder at your office, save the receipts, save your payment stuff, make sure that you're keeping track of everything on those expenses.
I will never, ever not be sick when I think of the amount of money that I have spent in penalties for the simple act of not filing the tax return on time and not asking for an extension.
Yeah, yeah, that's a brutal one. But again, even just those $50, you know, late penalty at Cox or, mm-hmm. you know, the $100, you forgot to pay your phone bill that month. You know, these things are easy to overlook. You know, you've got 1,800 things going on because you're a small business. You're trying to do everything to keep it going. You know, you're wearing many hats. Sometimes the accounting falls to the back end. So
one thing I like to do is I like to kind of set it and forget it. So as much as possible, I like to put it on auto pay.
It's great if you can.
Now, I know one of the people that I worked with before, they used to pay all their invoices on their like American Express cards. Mm-hmm. And then they accrued so many points, they were able to take lots of trips.
It's a great idea.
But my biggest thing is, as you said, not wanting to get in trouble, you know, mm-hmm. not wanting to, you know, because there's two things there that come to mind not only are you saving yourself from those penalties and everything, but you're also retaining credit with these people that you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people, they actually report any late payments.
Yes.
To credit bureaus,
very
which
quickly,
then
sometimes
affects you negatively on your credit score, yeah. personal and business.
Yeah. Another little tip on those invoices that you're paying out is sometimes you'll see things like net 30, net 60, net 90. That means you have that many days to pay them. And it needs to be received before those days. Some people claim like if I postmark it by that day, then you know, it's good enough, which usually most people don't get too upset about. But pay real close attention to when everything is due. And really, you can negotiate those a lot of times with your vendors. So if you're in a business where your main supplier gives you stuff and maybe you don't sell it for 30 to 60 days, you can usually negotiate with them. Like, hey, can we get a net 90 term here or something like that? So just a little thought for helping your business out. The next thing we're going to talk about is software. I've already mentioned it a few times. QuickBooks is kind of the gold standard there for small businesses. There is an online version and a desktop version. I much prefer the desktop version, but that's just because I've used it for so long and I work very fast on it. The desktop or online version can be a little clunky, but it does download your transactions. And if you get it set up correctly, it'll integrate and be very fast every month. So there is something to be said for that online. If you can kind of get it working correctly, it really saves you a lot of time, makes things easy. You can access it from anywhere. The desktop's a little bit harder, you know, it's just on a computer or something like that.
When I was using QuickBooks, I used both. Mm-hmm. The one thing I liked but also turned out to be a negative on the online version was that I could have multiple versions, multiple windows open.
Yeah.
So I could see different things. Mm-hmm. But where that was a negative a little bit is because if I made a mistake in one of those windows, then it would automatically affect everything. So it kind of allowed me to split my concentration and made it easier to make a mistake. Hence the double entry of a lot of things, you know, where I effectively doubled all the transactions in, mm-hmm. in several accounts.
The big kind of reason I like the desktop version the best is because they have a better or more robust accountant version that I can make corrections on much faster. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy for me to reclassify a bunch of transactions, move things around, do a couple quick journal entries to get your books correct. The online version is a little more difficult to correct. But if you can get the online version working and you're paying attention to it and you really do understand it, it can be nice. For small businesses. So they have great invoicing tracking and they have some great bill pay. They even have, I think, options to pay using their software. So it's pretty great. QuickBooks is kind of the one I like to use. I complain a lot about it. You know, there's a lot of features I wish were better, but it is, I think, the best out there. So not that we need a sponsorship or anything from, but there are some other ones out there. I don't know if Quicken's still doing their thing. And there's some much bigger programs. Like, eventually, if you scale your business, you will graduate from QuickBooks and need a more robust accounting software or a client relations management software or something like that that will integrate. There's also some great POS systems that have built-in accounting, so you can use that as well. And then there are industry-specific ones. So there's one I'm somewhat familiar with or was in the past is Yardi. That is very specific for real estate management. So it helps with the pro rata share of like CAM expenses and taxes and things like that at different deals. And it makes the year-end CAM reconciliations much easier. So that is a commercial real estate specific software. But there are other industries. There's trucking ones and some specific retail shops, a lot of marijuana ones we deal with. So,
okay. Well, I would say then take some time to really, really study these things and figure out which one's best for you. One problem I always had with QuickBooks or any of these things is inventory tracking. So you either need to figure out a way to do that that's outside of QuickBooks where you can bring in what you need, or QuickBooks also has inventory.
They do.
Figure out how to use it correctly.
Yeah. I think they have an add-on program that works pretty well for inventory.
Right. They also have invoicing that goes along with that as well. So you can kind of use it as a POS in a way.
Yep. I will say that it is a very good idea if you're brand new to QuickBooks to make sure that you do some online tutorials and stuff like that. You can also hire someone like me or another QuickBooks professional. They also have a thing called QuickBooks Pro Advisors that can set you up. So they can get it all set up and integrated properly, even get your first couple of bank statements downloaded so that it's working properly, and then you can do it yourself.
They also have bookkeeping as well, if I remember right.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, they wouldn't do my bookkeeping because they said my bookkeeping was such a mess and it was like 4 years in arrears or something like that.
Yeah.
So don't let it get behind. You know,
right.
The main thrust of all this with the software, in my opinion, and I'm speaking from experience, is know what you're doing if you're going to use it. Like just take the time to really learn it, you know. And I know it's, for a lot of people, it's like me, it's going to make your eyes glaze over and it's boring as hell, but it's so essential. And don't let it get so far behind that you're overwhelmed or anybody else that looks at it is overwhelmed. Because all that does is just create stress.
My suggestion for small businesses is set aside a little bit of time either every day or every week, but don't go much longer than that. And just set aside even like 10, 15 minutes a day. Just double check your invoicing is all right. Make sure all your expenses are uploaded properly and then move on. If it's one of those things that if you just set aside, you know, 15 minutes a day or maybe an hour a week, that you'll be ahead of the curve the whole time. If you wait 2-3 months and you've got 3 months of transactions you got to put in, you're like, man, that's 5 hours of work now. I got to do all that work, and it gets out of hand.
It's a chore that's not fun.
Yeah.
But you know what is fun? What is fun is knowing where you're at and being able to see that money and be able to see, you know, where exactly the money is and how strong your business is and what you can invest in, what you can afford, what you can't, you know. It shows you so much insight into different aspects of your business when you really know where you're at. And, you know, Scott was talking a moment ago about all the nickel and diming from being late on invoices. Well, there's another aspect of this that's really important is there are places where you can be leaking money.
Yeah.
You know, you can have subscriptions, for example. You can have $200 a month in subscriptions. Or, for example, I had a thing where we were actually getting scammed. There was somebody that had figured out how to do a check, how to do withdrawal by check.
Yep.
And they were withdrawing $200 a month, 2 times $99, right? Mm-hmm. And this went on for over 24 months before I finally caught it.
Yeah, and that's just because you're not looking at stuff every
right,
day.
And you're not looking at it. I would have caught that in the first month if I'd have seen it. I would have mm-hmm. been like, what the hell's this?
Yep.
Right? They literally created a check as if it was written from us, like we were giving them a check, and then they were depositing it electronically using the, what do they call it? The ETF, no, I forget.
ETF
system, mm-hmm. right? And when I went to look it up as to what this was about, like who the payee was, it just was like scam, 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 you know, or this is a scam, this, you know, and it was several different versions of it, but it was basically all the same thing, same type of scam. So I was mad at Chase because I was like, you know, you guys should have seen this. You should have protected me. But they were like, we're not the ones that are looking at your account. You're supposed to be looking at your account.
It's very common. I had one go on for about 4 or 5 months that was like $8 or something. And
yeah,
you just don't notice little transactions like that. And then, you know, if they did that to 10,000 people, they're making a bunch of money.
Yeah, so. or subscriptions that you sign up to, you know.
Yeah.
I've had probably times when I've had $100 in subscriptions, things that I signed up to that I thought, oh, yeah, let's try that. This seems like a good business program that I could use or something,
and
right?
And you never use it again.
And then I don't use it, and then I forget, and then they start charging me after the trial period, and then it just goes on.
Yeah. So next we're going to talk a little bit about income taxes and really, again, that's the other point of making good financial statements, not only to tell where you're at, but to do taxes at the end of the year. And so we use the balance sheet and the profit and loss to do your taxes. Your net income is typically your taxable income. And so that's what you're paying taxes on. There are four kind of main types of taxes that small business owners are going to face. The first one you mentioned before is the sole proprietorship, which that is filed on a Schedule C. So it's on your just personal tax return, profit and loss from business. Sole proprietorships are just single owner LLCs. Sometimes a husband and wife who file a joint return can file a Schedule C even if they're 50-50, but talk with your tax professional before that happens. They're considered a disregarded entity for the purposes of IRS. So that's why this form is not separate. It's just a schedule that is filed on your personal tax return. It's pretty straightforward. Even if you're an LLC, if you're just one owner, you're still filing.
So Schedule C basically means an additional piece of paper that's filed with your personal tax
return. Correct. Correct. Okay. Yeah, not a separate form. The next three are separate tax returns. So the next one that's very common is the partnership return, or it's a form 1065. And so that is when there are more than one owner of an LLC. You file this separate tax return, and each of the owners receive a K-1. And the K-1 shows your share of the business income, distributions, and all that stuff. And that then, K-1, is included on your personal return. The next one that we commonly see is an S-Corp. S-Corps are the most kind of common trick that people use for taxes. It helps to avoid self-employment tax, which I'll talk about in a minute. But very similar to the partnership return, you can have a one-owner S-Corp, though, but you still receive a K-1, and those are then shown on your personal tax return. So for these first three, Schedule C, Form 1065, and the S-Corp, Form 1120S, those are all shown the income on your personal tax return. The business itself will never owe income taxes on those forms. So the business doesn't owe anything. You may have like a penalty or interest if you filed late, but those don't owe actual income taxes. Those just show what the business made, and then they're included on your personal tax return. The final one is the C-Corp, or the Form 1120. This is a completely separate entity. This pays its own share of taxes. The entity is completely separate from the owners. There are shareholders that may own portions of it, but the C-Corp is a separate tax return, and it pays its own taxes. You, as a shareholder, if you own part of an S-Corp, will receive a 1099 DIV, or 1099 dividend, to show how much money you made out of the company. And that's typically where you hear this double taxes for corporations. People, you may have heard that before, because you're taxed, the C-Corp itself is taxed, and then you're also taxed on your dividends that you receive from the company.
So it is factually a double tax?
It is. There are some times where it's very advantageous to have that, even though, you know, quote unquote, double taxed. But again, do not be doing a corporation without a tax professional guiding you through that process. In fact, don't even do an S-Corp without a tax professional guiding you.
Is this something that a normal person can create by themselves?
They absolutely can. You can create a C-Corp, you can create an S-Corp, you can create a partnership all by yourself. Partnerships you could do by yourself. They're not terribly complicated, and the K-1's pretty simple. But the S-Corp has real specific regulations, particularly with owner payroll, that have to be followed. And C-Corps are not advantageous unless a tax person's doing it.
What can happen if you don't follow these procedures correctly?
Mostly you just get fined out the wazoo. So you're just paying penalties and interest. So it is 5% a month for non-filing penalty and 5% a month for non-paying penalty. There are estimated tax penalties if you don't pay your taxes ahead of time properly. And then there's lots of other fines and interest.
Don't they have to pay like quarterly as well?
Sometimes it depends. There's a thing called estimated tax payments, which sometimes you have to pay. Your tax professional or whoever does your taxes will take care of that. Really, you just have to pay either 90%, or if you are a high income earner, 110% of what you paid last year in order to avoid those penalties. But again,
so are we saying basically in general, you want to try to be an S Corp?
No. So an S-Corp is only advantageous at certain income levels, and then it does not become advantageous anymore. So for your business, we have JB Cases set up as an S-Corp. We get good tax advantage there. The Chester's is not an S-Corp. That is just regular. We have that as a Schedule C because there's not enough tax advantage for the income level that you're at.
Understand. Okay.
And the S-Corps, the whole kind of trick of that is to avoid self-employment tax. So I want to talk just briefly on self-employment tax. Self-employment tax is basically an additional tax on your personal return, and it is 15.3%. And where that number came from is FICA taxes. So if you've worked a regular W-2 job, you've probably seen where Social Security and Medicare get deducted. Social Security is 6.2% and Medicare is 1.45%, a total of 7.65% that is withheld from your paycheck. The employer who employs you has to match that amount. So they have to match the FICA amount, and then that's submitted to the government for your Social Security and Medicare. those two numbers together, 15.3%. So you as a self-employed person, you're not avoiding the FICA taxes. You still got to pay them. They hit you with both.
So you basically pay double. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. So you got to be really paying attention.
It makes sense because, you know, basically the government wants 15.3% from every human that's working.
Correct. Correct. Now, the S Corp does have the neat trick that they don't have to pay self-employment tax on all of their earnings, only a portion of them. So that's where it can be advantageous depending on your income level. But again, I always make the suggestion that if you're going to be an S corporation, you better hire me to do it for you. Don't do it yourself. Because if you're late on one of the forms, you have to file payroll reports, you have to receive the correct officer salary, which has to be reasonable based on your net income. If you are not using a tax professional, the penalties and interest are going to far outweigh what you actually saved.
So famously, like when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he was taking pay of $1 a year.
Yeah.
But he was taking basically compensation in stock.
Yeah.
How would that work for someone? And I know that that's way out of the realm of what we're talking about as far as small business goes.
Yeah. So those are considered benefits that you get as an employee. A lot of times employees will receive as part of their compensation package stock in the company. And so a C corporation is allowed to issue multiple kinds of stock. And so that's when... that's the kind of company.
But would he have effectively paid tax if he was only getting $1 a year?
When he sold the stock.
Only when he sold the stock.
He received the stock, and when he sold it, that's when he gets a capital gain based on the basis of when he received it. Yeah. So
if he had enough money saved up to just live, he could have effectively just lived forever without ever selling the stock.
That's correct. And that happens sometimes too, because when you pass away and you inherited it, whoever inherits your stock, they get a stepped up basis for stuff. So they don't have to pay capital gains on huge portions of it if they don't want to.
You know, people don't like to think about stuff like this, you know, but if something happens to you or whatever, I think that an accountant can really help you to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but can really help you to learn how to set up all your assets and everything to protect them as much as possible, as much as legally possible, you know, from taxes.
Yep. Always great to find somebody. So yeah. The last couple things on taxes I want to talk about just very briefly, depreciation. So depreciation can sometimes be confusing for people, but anything that you purchase for your business that is a piece of equipment or a regularly used thing, leasehold improvements, you know, increasing the value of the building, signs outside your building are considered assets, and assets are depreciated. So $2,500 is the typical limit that we use. Anything above that, that's a recurring useful item, we consider an asset. And assets are depreciated. And there are many different types of depreciation. There's also bonus depreciation. I'm not going to get into it. But those won't show up on your profit and loss. They'll show up on your balance sheet as assets, and then they're depreciated over time. And then the last thing is, when you became an expert, you should have learned kind of what industry you were in back in our second step of phase one. You should look up at this time different credits. So there are lots of credits and industry specific stuff that you can get that you want to make sure your accountant is aware of. Just recently I was talking with somebody about research and development credits. There's some specific small business tax credits that can be got through research and development, and their particular accountant didn't know anything about it. So they were asking me if I knew something about it, and I know a little bit, but I would have to do more research on that specific one is what I told them. But just because I'm an accountant doesn't mean I know the entire tax code. It's ludicrous. You know, there's way too much.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, if applied correctly, I can get credit for my research into the dipshittery of customers on Facebook?
Yeah, no, but good thought. So, but in this step, just make sure you spend a little bit of time looking at the credits that might apply to your industry. And then the last thing, and we can be done with accounting because I could go on for days, is when to hire someone. So I really suggest you hire somebody for a consultation right away. When you're starting a business, have them look over your business plan, have them look over your structures, and make sure that everything's kind of fallen in line with what they suggest. A $500 or $1,000 consultation for somebody who's in your who knows your industry, who knows accounting, who can help you kind of guide in the direction, the right direction, will save you a ton of money in the future. You don't necessarily need to hire a bookkeeper right out of the gate, but it is advisable if you can find somebody to just make sure that everything's being done correctly. And then I highly suggest that you don't try to do your own taxes. Hire somebody at the end of the year, pay the extra money to have somebody just file the taxes. If you have the QuickBooks or a financial statement or even all of your expenses in a spreadsheet, your accountant does not charge as much. So if I have to do financials for people, which means they dump on me bags of receipts and bank statements and credit card statements, and I have to go through all of them, I charge a fortune. But I do not charge a fortune if you just bring me everything in a nice, easy spreadsheet that I can sort and do quickly. So my suggestion on to hire somebody day one to at least look it over, and then make sure you have at least a professional doing your taxes every year. And then kind of graduate eventually to a bookkeeper and maybe a monthly review type thing.
I'll say this, you know, the only business that has been started in my family that we are not partners on, you and I, but is Lulu's, right? And the fact that Lulu could come to you, talk about it all, kind of lay it all out, has been such a stress reliever for her, because now she knows where she's at. She knows how much she's invested. She knows, you know, kind of she's free to think about things like how I'm going to do the marketing, and she's already budgeted for that. So mm-hmm. She's not worried about what she's spending because it's already, in effect, it's already spent in the budget.
Yeah.
So she's good with it. And so she's very free to be creative and figure out, you know, cool ways to market her product. And she's having a lot of fun with it.
Yep. And it's great also just to get another set of eyes on stuff, even just a few minutes of somebody's time to look over the projections that you put together, the budget. I guarantee they'll find something you forgot about or be able to add mm-hmm. 2 cents to make it worth the money that you pay.
Or like the building, you know, that we talked about, mm-hmm. you know, it's my initial thought, you know, was this looks great on paper. Let's buy it.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, as we looked at it and you looked at it from an accountant's point of view, I sobered up very quickly in understanding that, you know, it wasn't such a good deal and it could develop into a major headache yeah. and also a financial boon for us. Not a boon, but the opposite of a boon.
Yeah, it would have been a money pit.
Pain, yeah, a money pit. There you go.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think, man? Did your eyes glaze over? How long did I go? Did I go a whole hour, Calvin?
Yeah.
Did we do our? Damn, I'm sorry. I tried to keep it short, but
no, you did great. I think we only went an hour because I kept interrupting you.
Ah, fair enough.
You know, I mean, I was trying to interject a little bit of humor in there. Somewhere.
Well, I don't think it was too bad, but those are sort of the highlights for your bookkeeping and accounting, and you as the small business owner should need. Again, we'll have a lot more information on turtlesmith.com, and hopefully, you guys have a basic understanding of the accounting procedures.
Well, you know. The most important thing that I can say as a businessman who didn't put a lot of value in accounting, because I always thought to myself, oh, it's so expensive and it's so much of a hassle, is you're probably going to lose a lot more than you will spend on the accountant.
Yeah.
That's one thing, right? Because you're just not going to do it right. It's like you wrote on here, accounting is a 4-year degree, so it's impossible to discuss in 30 minutes. Well, guess what? It's even more impossible to learn proper accounting while you're trying to run your business.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee you that if you have a tax professional do your taxes at the end of the year, they're going to save you at least a little money. So it's going to be worth having them in your corner helping you out.
Now, you know, one thing I would ask, though, is so I often see a commercial on Facebook, you know, as I'm going through it. And it's always the same guy with the same thing. He's like, if you're having an accountant prepare your books or your taxes or whatever, you're definitely losing money is his pitch.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure that probably rankles you when you hear that kind of a pitch from someone.
Yeah, a little.
But basically what he's trying to say is we're smarter than your accountant, right?
Yeah.
So if we know things that your accountant doesn't know. And I guess it's similar to people saying, you know, like doctors don't keep up with the latest information or something like that. I don't know. I've never gone further than watching the thing. But my question to you, though, is how should people know like I had one accountant where several years after he filed the taxes for us, we got a letter from the IRS saying we owed another $12,000 because something wasn't done right on there. And how does one know though? How would one find out whether an accountant is good or not? Like
it's really tough, and the accounting world is sort of a can be sort of a lawless wasteland of hucksters. You don't have to have a bunch of credentials to file taxes. You have to be you have to get a EFIN, you know, to or e-file identification number to file taxes through the software. But you don't really have to have super, you know, legit credentials to open a business. So for example, I don't have a CPA license. I'm just enrolled with the IRS. But I've studied and I worked really hard, and I came up through, you know, multiple accounting companies, and I'm savvy enough to do most taxes. I myself have a kind of specialty of small businesses, and I can do most small business industries, but there's some things that I don't mess with. Like I don't do oil accounting. I have an accountant that does the oil that I'm invested in. She is an expert in oil and gas accounting. And so one of the things I like to usually ask accountants is, you know, what's your specialty? What's your field? And if they say that they know the entire tax code and are geniuses and know everything that there is to know, and they could file any type of tax return, I usually think they're full of shit, or they're Rain Man, one or the other, you know?
So if you're a small business, you're mm-hmm. starting out, would somebody be okay to go like an H&R Block or something like that, or you know, like you see at Walmart?
I would. I don't want to shit on H&R Block, but I would avoid those. I would avoid the ones at Walmart. I would find an actual accountant, a CPA or a small business accountant like myself, and go to like a local firm. You will usually find a guy who's real sharp, real savvy. Knows his stuff and will help you out, you know, or gal. I didn't mean just guy, but you'll usually find somebody that's great and that you get along with and you can talk to. If you go to H&R Block, you're going to get a different person every year. They're going to be okay, but not amazing. It's worth paying the extra money, and it's not as expensive as you think it'll be.
So,
especially if you've done all your accounting.
Would it be a good idea to ask around with your business friends and things mm-hmm. like that and see who they're happy with?
Yeah, 100%.
I got a guy method.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. 90% of my clients are referrals. So,
okay.
Yeah, you can find people that are great, you know, and just go meet them and talk to them. You'll know pretty quick. And if you've spent the time learning the basics of accounting, you'll know real fast if they know what they're talking about.
Okay, sounds great. Well, I don't think that was boring at all. I was really dreading this episode.
But, oh, okay. Well, good. Good. I'm glad I kept you entertained for at least a little while.
Well, I mean, it was more entertaining for me too, because I have been through all the shit that comes with not doing it right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I feel so much at ease now. I know if there's anything at all that I'm thinking about, I can just pick up the phone and call you or send you a text and you know, you come pretty quick with the answer. And there have been times when you have said, no, that's not a good idea, and here's why. And
yeah.
You've made it clear financially, and I've been like, okay, fine. I'll let that dream die and move on to the next one.
There you go. This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.